Actually, I was asked the question by Peter when I sent the title whether this was really Bogomolov or Bogomolny. Actually, so I sort of motivated why I'm interested in looking at this can put inequality here. Why I'm interested in this kind of inequality, and this really goes two ways. I could be Bogomolov, or in physical language, it would be Bogomolny. So I'll motivate a little bit how one can set out to get such inequalities just from very simple Young Mills theory arguments. And then I'll explain what's this Bogomolov type of theorems. And why someone would like to consider this and try to generalize it in math and physics. So second, I'll see this thing. This thing is really something that can be just deleted on first passing. I'll decide based on time whether I should say something about this or not. But it puts everything in a sort of coherent big picture. This results in math due to Maruyama and Carlos Simpson. It's probably of not much physics interest, but from one point of view, if you would like to have some first principle explanation of why general BPS Hilbert spacing in physical theory would have finite dimensions, well, this of course gives you some kind of a foundation for that. It also explains why. So these inequalities, let me just see what they're about. They're about Chern numbers of state dot. Holomorphic. So these two really in physics keywords would be translating to BPSness. And stable holomorphic vector bundles or coherent shifts. You can have your P. So this thing which one might try to skip actually explains why the choices of these numbers, which are discrete choice, is actually finite, given given some, initial conditions. And this is really the inspiration for going or trying to go in beyond Bogomolov type, Bogomolov theorem. Okay. Put beyond in lowercase because it's really hard. So this is a paper in 2006 by actually by. Yeah, Michael Douglas. Rehnbacher. So they proposed based on very much physics arguments, some inequalities among Chern numbers of stable vector bundles, which actually involves the third Chern class. This was new, actually. All the previous ones, based on geometry, usually only include even ones, especially the second Chern class. It's hard to give this guy a, well, it does have a geometric meaning. It's just hard to give this guy some kind of positivity property. But from physics arguments, this seemed completely reasonable. So this will be sort of a model and starting point for going beyond Bogomolov. This inspired a lot of work actually recently in sort of DT environment context or Bridgeland stability or Bridgeland Douglas high stability context. This people have been trying to conjecture, speculate about inequalities involving C3 for a complex of a vector boundary. And in some cases, simple cases, people have proofs. But and it's still a bit mysterious, and it'd be good to put it into good physics perspective, maybe. So here, their motivation was really attractor mechanism for BPS black holes on some Calabi-Yau 3 fold. And then we have some recent progress of constructing some vector bundles which satisfy the DRY conjecture. So sort of two aspects of this. One is some Hirschhorn construction. This is ancient. And then there's deformation theory method, which allows you to prove this construction is actually stable. So in examples, for example, if I have elliptic curve fibered over P2 giving me a certain Calabi-Yau 3 fold X, then one can really see that much of the DRY conjectured range of the Chern number is actually realized by actual reflexive shifts. So these are slightly worse than vector bundles, but as physicists, you shouldn't be afraid of these things. They are just—they're almost like a vector bundle, but for a threefold, they have some singular behavior in terms of gauge connection in complex codimension three, which means just they're kind of bad along some points, but nowhere else. So this is even nicer than what we are used to for instant tangent on a four manifold, because those guys, if you take sort of Dirac delta function distribution in your equation for the curvature, then those are actually singular in codimension two. So those are in some sense worse. So these guys are nicely behaved, at least best behavior among coherent shifts. And their arguments, I think Distler and other people argued that in the hadronic strain, you should really be able to resolve these singularities. I don't really understand what they base their claims on, but generally, if you recall, if you want to have a reasonable superpotential for string theory, then you need the modular space to be compact. So some kind of singular behavior is required just to make the modular space of stable objects, or if we put an equal sign here, the PPS modular space. So if you want to have compact modular space, and then some kind of shift behavior must be allowed, even in the hadronic strain. So in type two, of course, this is nothing unusual. You always have a d-brain, and some d-brains always sit in codimension, non-zero codimension. So a bound state generally is a shift instead of bound up, but Yeah, so I believe even for hydraulic extreme where you don't have deep rains, such behaviors are kind of necessary. And so anyway, and then we'll try to maybe talk about some generalization of DRY so they based their arguments on attractor mechanism, but there's a lot of activity about wall crossing and split attractor flow. So you might try to rework what they did using a flow with multiple endpoints, knowing that there are multiple stable objects at different points of moduli space, and try to see if you can get inequalities among the chain numbers for the total bound state. So this is pretty much everything, and probably more than everything I will cover. So first let me just do this. Let me try to give, like, it's really very simple, so I can basically motivate this kind of inequality. This is one example where the algebraic method is much harder than differential methods. So if I take the physics point of view, I can basically derive some kind of inequality in one line. So if I take the Yamiel's function, right, then this is really where I could call this Bogomolnyi. Argument where you can just stick the anti-self dual, since this is in four dimensions. You can put this guy in, and then apart from this term, which self-dual and anti-self-dual connections would vanish, you got something like and this is really C2E. So this Yang-Miao section here is bounded when this goes to zero below, especially for anti-self-dual, I believe, by the second Chern class, which is really the instanton number. And some kind of, yeah, this is the action of an instanton, of course. You can generalize this to any manifold, four manifold, to sort of make the stability come out. I try to stick in what's called the Hermitian Yamiel's equation, and try to get this on the four manifold. But the reason that you can do this on any four manifold is some work by Taubes, Clifford Taubes, which tells you that on any four manifold M4, removing a finite number of points, you can always find anti-self-dual connections on this bundle. So anyway, so in this slightly more general case, I have basically this is given by, so this is really the quantity that enters what's called this Bogomolov inequality. What happens is this can be written as the following, where this F0 is the traceless part. identity matrix, and this can be further rewritten as so these are an NSFDO combinations of this traceless curvature, and this is the self-dual part. So this only tells me what's the relation between MLS functional and this expression. I actually have to do to show that this is bigger than zero for stable bounders. How to do a local calculation. And this is basically rather silly. Basically, there are two ways to understand what's going on. One is just diagonalize this Yamiel's curvature. And this is the same as what people prefer slightly in math literature to finding a normal coordinate so that the killer, well, if you wish, the metric or the killer form has this simple form. So in either way, I can basically manipulate this equation so that what you got is really is it minus. This is plus. This is just killer form to some power, depending on the dimension. So both of these quantities here are actually positive definite for unit tree connection. So this actually shows so the point was that basically, if F you can write this in local coordinates, but the condition for this thing to achieve the lower bound is basically this piece is proportional to identity. Right? So under this condition, then I achieve this lower bound. And this is actually what I already mentioned, the Hermitian-Yamiel's equation. And so the global minimum for this Yamiel's function is achieved and is given by this thing, which is positive. Right? So the Bogomolov inequality basically tells me if I have a stable object or stable holomorphic vector bounder, then I can find some kind of metric which is killer on this on the sections of this this vector bounder. Okay. So it goes both ways. Actually, what I've just done here is the local calculation, and this is simple because I'm assuming there's already such a metric on this vector bounder. So going this way, basically deducing from the existence of a Hermitian metric, which is guaranteed by this condition, this inequality is quite simple. But going the other way is quite hard. So that in math literature, well, that was achieved by Donaldson and Uhlenbeck and Yao, which basically says if you have a vector bounder whose trend classes satisfy such an inequality, then it's guaranteed there's a Hermitian-Yamiel's connection on this vector bound. Okay, so this is sort of the mother of all other forms of inequalities which are concerned with stable objects. Okay, so, I mean, the significance of Hermitian Yamias actually in physics, at least, if you take a quadratic string sigma model, so this has some 2-0 supersymmetry, then this basically tells you that the worksheet theory is conformally invariant. So there's actually another aspect of this Bogomolov inequality, which is it has something to do with birational geometry. So it's not only some statement about vector bundles, but also tells you something about the geometry of the underlying manifold. So it helps you to classify spaces, in this case, four-dimensional manifolds. I think there's a paper by Greg Moore and Salina and another collaborator about the geography for manifolds. And this is based on actually the cyber-weighted invariants and conformal four-dimensional superconformal field theory. In some sense, what we are trying to do here is to try to find numerical invariants which characterize the geography of Calabi-Yau three folds. Okay, so trying to decide, because I want to give you a flavor of sort of birational geometry. You can just treat this as a sort of word that comes out of this kind of inequalities. I don't want to sort of bore you too much. But since there's one thing that I need later, so which is concerned here, so let me just give you an example of how things actually work when I try to talk about a construction of vector bundle in some algebraic language, how these things tie in. Because it seems this curvature forms and generally the construction of vector bundles are kind of unrelated. So let me take an example. Since I'll be using this kind of Serre construction here, let me show you that actually this kind of inequality tells you automatically some vector bundles you construct from this Serre construction already are unstable. So one thing one should keep in mind is in algebraic geometry or in one's effort to apply it to string theory, this BPS condition always translates into some kind of stability condition. So nice objects translate into objects with nice modular spaces. But it's given, if I just hand you some construction of vector bundles or shift, it's very hard to tell whether it's actually stable or not, especially when the rank is higher than 2, you start running into very complicated checks of you have to look for. So the stability really so for example, for the stability condition that's involved in this Hermitian Yamias, it's really a simple numerical check. So given a bundle or any of its sub-bundles, I can define this numerical quantity, which is called a slope for historical reasons. So this slope is the ratio of the curvature of first string class with its rank. Okay. So a bundle is unstable if you can find some sub-bundle such that for this guy, when you compute this quantity, it's actually bigger than the bundle that it lives inside. Then it's no good. So it becomes very complicated thing to do when the rank goes higher, because you tend to have a lot of these guys and you have to check which one is bad. And so this Bogomolov inequality automatically tells me that if I just can compute this numerical invariance, then I already know if this guy is stable or not. So basically, this thing is sometimes called discriminant. So if it's bigger than zero, I know it's stable. And the other way, I know it's unstable. Okay. So there's actually a nice translation that ties serial construction and the unstable case. It's sometimes referred to as Reader's theorem. I mentioned this name. Again, this is just a name. Because actually, in this DT environment work, people actually was motivated by thinking about this theorem and generalizing to more to threefold cases. Okay. So let's just forget about this. But this can be, this will show up sort of later on. So this unstable case is when this combination is smaller than zero. And let me take actually rank equal to. And I'll construct bounda. Actually, the theorem basically tells me if this is unstable, then there exists a sequence, an exact sequence, such that the guy that's unstable sits inside. And this is basically the sub-line bounda. This is a line bounda because in rank 2, the only thing that that can be unstable, making this thing unstable, is just rank 1. So this guy, so the theorem basically Bogomolov, once this inequality checks out, I know it's unstable, then it implies there's such a short exact sequence, which looks like this, okay? And this divisor D, this is, so for a surface, think of this D as a curve. D is a curve. This is a divisor. This is ample and it's unique. Some algebraic language that you don't have to worry too much about. But the point is, this thing would exist, okay? And moreover, there's some numerical quantity. You can actually compute this now. Okay, so this is lambda. This is something that's called the quotient. Basically, you remove this guy, you got this thing. This is actually the kernel. But what's slightly funny is there's, so while those two parts are nice things like lambda, this guy is a more funny shift. It's stuff that's supported on points, a finite number of points. And the point, number of points, I'm just using this notation. Okay, so why I'm talking about this, this is actually an example of a serial construction. And this serial construction show up very often in constructing rank 2 vector bundles. But moreover, if I compute this guy, then I can, it's actually like a two-line computation. And I will find that this is just so again, this is some number of points on this surface. And these two guys, okay, this is bigger than zero. I have to flip my conventions. So this tells me this thing is bigger than zero. So this intersection is actually, self-intersection is actually bigger than zero because this is some non-zero number. Okay, so this tells me that there's just purely from this, I can imagine that in terms of physics, if I think of this as these are D2 bound state on some algebraic surface. So this will be a D' bound state. Then this D minus D prime, this is some D2 charge. Well, this Z is the number of D0 brands, because these are points. Right. So if I know the bundle is unstable, I can deduce some kind of inequality among the charges of this physical bound state. And vice versa, if I know that the other inequality is achieved, I know that there is a chance these guys will form BPS state. Okay, so why do I go through this trouble? Because if you have a gauge theory, it's easy to tell when you have a BPS state. But if I'm on a curved four manifold, this is actually hard. So if I give you a Calabi-Yau threefold, I want you to tell me how to construct a BPS bound state out of D-brands, it becomes a complicated issue. So this tells you that there are numerical ways to check whether you've got a BPS state or not in physical language. So this Serre construction very naively is just some extension of two rank one shifts into a rank two vector bundle. You can repeat this and you can get higher rank guys. Okay, so this argument is, I'm not going to show it, although it's completely kind of straightforward, but so this shows you what's the role of Bogomolov type of inequalities in differential or in gauge theory or differential geometry of vector bundles, and in terms of this more microscopic formulation, maybe in terms of D-brands or shifts. Okay. So generally, the philosophy is I look for some inequality among chain numbers, and I try to tell whether the guy that has those chain numbers is BPS state or not. It's kind of black magic. But again, let me sort of just make things easier here. For this boundedness, I just want to mention, for example, in that case, if I fixed the rank of the vector bundle and the first two churn classes, I believe, then you have what's called a bounded family. So the moduli space is some finite dimensional thing, and it's fixed by these topological numbers. This quantity is really fixed the component of the moduli space you're talking about. So if you like, well, if you do worry about things like landscape, then this tells you some simple choices of numerical invariance forces you to have bounded or like a very finite landscape. In some somewhat more general language, you want to fix something like Hilbert polynomial, and this Hilbert polynomial is nothing but Hilbert function. This is just Euler character of some twisted version of your original line vector bundle. And there are two ways to compute this. One is actually by Riemann-Roch. And I'm mentioning this because then this shows that these churn classes. So once this guy is bounded, these numbers are bounded. So effectively by choosing some lower bound on the values of your churn classes, you automatically got an upper bound. You cannot just go up and up. Let me try to get. Let me just go to what the more interesting part for physicists is, the DIY conjecture. And how this comes from just attractor mechanism. So the attractor mechanism tells you that if you have a Calabi-Yau manifold of your choice, could be product of tori, But the point is, the shape of this guy keeps changing. When you, let's imagine this is R3, and you have a radius which is usually defined, then you have Calabi or any other sort of compactation manifold called X with some number of moduli, let's call it just tau, and this T. Okay, so this T will vary when you actually go from R equals infinity to zero. And the attractor point is a statement that when you go to the center of your black hole, or actually this is horizon, and then sort of it doesn't matter where you have started with at R equal infinity, the point in modular space doesn't really matter. Well, it does matter, it decides which attractor point you go to. But once you're at such a point, these values are fixed by, so they're determined by charges. So of course, from very simple physics point of view, this is simply the BPS solutions are very limited in number. So you sort of almost have a one-to-one map between charges and solutions. So once you have that, then of course you can only have limited choices for the shape of this guy at the horizon. Okay, but sometimes people think too much about easy things, and we have an attractor mechanism. So this attractor mechanism can be stated. So if I think of D3 brains, so there will be just three cycles on X. So some language, this will be, let me not even get in that. But there's, since this is a Calabi-Yau or Keeler manifold, there's generally Hodge decomposition. So basically, this means globally, it makes sense to sort of decompose this guy into holomorphic pieces and anti-holomorphic ones plus the bar. Okay. So the attractor mechanism formulated for these three brains, which wrap three cycles on the Calabi-Yau threefold, it actually just tells me that the charge of charge, which is really a vector, these guys are of dimension of complex structure modular space, the length of these vectors. So this will be like H 2-1 roughly, or twice. H21. So once you fix your these are topological things. So when the shape varies, you still got this vector, and the attractor point is this, the attractor equation is the at the attractor point for your gauge theory, which is some bundle or shift that lives on this Calabi-Yau manifold. This guy, the attractor equation is just a very short equation that tells you there's some constant, and the Calabi-Yau threefold has a unique holomorphic 3-0 form. So basically, it tells you that you can solve this equation. The significance is because is that this tells you that these guys, once you're at the attractor point, the charges do not involve these guys. You're only left with these two. Okay. So it's a claim that you can solve this equation when you're at, I don't know which side, this horizon. So these are three cycles of course real objects, and we are sort of interested in holomorphic counterparts of this. So we'll need what's called B brains, right? So these B brains will come by performing mirror symmetry. And this equation then translates into, now, okay, that was really some three cycle. Now I have really a vector bundle and the equation becomes something like this. So now this is on X mirror. And this guy is actually, instead of the 3-0 form, not by mirror symmetry, this becomes the complexified Killer form. Okay, so I'm going to solve this equation now for B and J, and B is the B field, J is the Killer form. So to do that, I just plug everything in. So especially this guy is just can be expanded. And this is really an input. And this input is really the chain, determined by chain character. So it's what's called sometimes Mukai vector. But this is really the charge vector. So if I fix the bound, I actually got this data out just automatically. And I'm now trying to solve this equation relating these two pieces of data. Okay. I'll do a simple trick so that this is zero. And then if I assume this, the equation can be actually solved in roughly two steps. So the equation really becomes up to some constant that I'm not going to concern you with. It's just if I parameterize, actually, the argument is rather elementary. So if I parameterize the second term class by some other class, this is actually a divisor. Then the third term class is just computed as some triple intersection number, but multiplied by this funny factor. And this funny factor, because we know that this thing is actually smaller than 2 or some other silly numerical constant. The point is, it gives me a relation of the magnitude of this guy divided by rank of E with the second Chern number. And this is some particular power. This is the significance of this calculation. It tells me if I take an attractor black hole, then if I consider this as D0 charges, and this is as D2 charges, then automatically there's a relation between these two. It's just bounded by topology and BPSness. So if I find something that has a bit too much growth of the third Chern class versus the second Chern class, I might suspect that's a thing with too much entropy and comes from something that's not a BPS object. Okay, so there are actually very many examples exist where C3E divided by rank. So this division by ranks sometimes is called homogeneous. So I'm sort of getting rid of the size factor. So this is very much allowed for a general vector bundle. So this 2, of course, is bigger than that. So for a general vector bundle, just from topological calculations involving Riemann-Roch theorem, very general. It's a very general theorem. Just from this, I can see that the relative relation of these two guys really goes by that power. While for a BPS guy, it goes like that. Those guys, DRY, speculated that this is a general thing that holds for stable holomorph. So DRY basically jumps to a conjecture that this holds for Calabi-Yau threefold of general nature and stable objects, meaning, well, they use reflexive shapes, but maybe more generally. Stable objects, their charges will satisfy such inequalities. Okay, so this is some inequality that would just come out of this attractor mechanism, but I skipped the calculation here to get these two, but the calculation is really just elementary algebra. So this is something that you wouldn't actually expect, and there's actually no motivation for this from just purely geometric considerations. And of course, this is based on work by Deneff, and also later there's Deneff Moore. But here they only use what's called regular attractor points. So it's really just some supergravity solutions with BPS conditions. So these things, of course, are conjectured to be related to Bridgeland or pi stability. But I think there's no proof of this. And it's not very direct to see it because the easiest way to see these kind of stability conditions in dynamical constructions using this language of D3 brains, where you go to the special Lagrangian three cycles instead of holomorphic objects. So the language used is a bit different, but maybe if you're insightful enough, you'll figure out immediately what's going on. But anyway, I want to mention this relation to the Bridgeland because a lot of the subsequent work trying to generalize this conjecture or propose different versions of this conjecture, for example, by Bertrand Macri and Toda, especially Toda wrote a lot of papers on this subject, is by using arguments related to Bridgeland stability. But then you go to Dirac category. Our instinct was to stay, just instead of going to derived categories, we just want to stay with simple stable objects like holomorphic vector bundles and try to see whether you can just mathematically construct these bundles or to explore to what degree these numerical invariants agree with DRY. Does life agree with DRY? So DRY conjecture actually was multiple conjectures. In the original paper, there was one which was found to be immediately wrong, but the other ones have not been found to be wrong. Actually, we did so to begin with, we did some numerical checks. So pick your favorite Calabi-Yau and pick your favorite way to construct bundles. Make sure they're stable in a certain range of this Kähler parameter or coupling space. And you try to check that these inequalities check out or not. So quite finally, for a complete intersection, Calabi-Yau threefolds, or for elliptically fibered guys, elliptically fibered threefolds, so here you would take some kind of what people call monad, but it's a generalization of this guy here. Some extension construction of vector bundles of higher rank. We check this to for rank equal 3, 4, 5, and this elliptic threefolds are just elliptic curves over some funnel threefolds. It's not called Fano surface. some base, which is funnel, and these guys we use what's called spectral cover. These are very standard in like people who do phenomenology in hydraulic string construction. They use this kind of construction. So you compare this with compare this check against DRY, and you can see this actually. There are some nice plots when you do this. This is in joint work with Yang Huihe and Shenpeng Yao. You see that really these non-waste construct stable bundles give you ones which pass the DRY check. So they agree with the inequality in terms of the chain numbers they have. But there are funny cases. The funny cases are where this X is actually self-mirror. So for self-mirror Calabi-Yau, one of them is called Schoen's Calabi-Yau threefold, Schoen's Calabi-Yau threefold. This is the only non-trivial one. All the other ones are products of Torah and K3. So for these things, you actually find the inequality seem to fail. But it's not clear whether that's just artifact that we are checking a limited sample. Maybe there are other constructions other than this one and this one, which would give you a stable bundle. So what fails was existence field. We didn't find such bundles, which doesn't mean that they don't exist. So it's not as bad as if there is a bundle which actually lies outside the range allowed by the DRY conjecture. So numerically it checks out. Since I'm running out of time, let me write actually what DRY says, since it's sort of. So it's an inequality that involves this C3. So in the complete form, it says on this Calabi-Yau manifold, if you have a bunch of numbers, integers, and they satisfy two conditions. One is some complicated form. Really, I already wrote it earlier, so I don't need to write it again. So this is the tangent bundle, while this is some gauge bundle on this space, on this Calabi-Yau. So this makes perfect sense in, for example, hydraulic string. So first of all, there is this guy, which, and this is ample, whatever. Just some nice positivity, which gives you vanishing terms. And this other guy is again some bunch of. So this you can get from the simpler version with only C2e and C3e by just making C first chain class non-zero. I think in physical literature you call this twisting or whatever. You can shift the BPS bound state charges for free, and it's still a bound state BPS state by using some spectral flow argument. But here, anyway, you got this. You end up with this complicated expression, which really came from the same thing there. And the claim is that this complicated thing, I really believe there should be an absolute value here, because this C3 can actually, the first thing you notice is that all differential form can be either signs. It cannot be having a definite sign, so you really have to put something there. Some funny number. So the claim is that if you only consider stable objects, then their chain classes in this funny combination is going to be bounded by the value of the second Chern class, which is parameterized by this HTL class. And moreover, they even claim that for every such thing, for each such ampere class, there actually I'm confused now. So for all choice of Keeler class, which is also ampere, there is such a bundle. So these numbers are not just some random four tuple of numbers, but there's actually a bundle whose Chern classes have that value. Okay. So that's a very strong claim, is existence claim. I just give you such random, but satisfy some messy inequalities, you believe that there's actually a vector bundle with all these complicated differential forms, and it'll conspire to satisfy these kind of things. Okay, so how do you check that? So a prototype for checking is actually suggested by looking at this guy. So this third Chern class actually is a bunch of numbers on threefold. So you're making a local modification to some shape or bundle at points. So one way to construct such a thing is actually turns out to be just taking direct sum of trivial lambdas on this Calabi-Yau, and you direct sum it with some, in this case it's with a curve. So you take this direct sum, and this is actually what people call semi-stable. The reason is just this guy is trivial, so C1, no matter how many copies you have, is zero. And this is, I think this is zero, because it's a curve. So if it's non-zero, it would be codimension one, it would be a divisor, it would be a surface. So C is a curve in a threefold. You can compute these things easily. So this guy is a good starting point. Basically, it's almost already stable, but it's a direct sum. And you want to change this slightly so that you get something that's actually stable. Basically, you want to grow some open strings between these two guys. So these open strings would be called a map. It's a section. And it turns out that pretty much like what's here, you will basically draw that kind of diagram. And what you end up having is this. So just actually almost just that. So now you have this guy, which is a non-trivial extension. You have to show that such extension exists, and this puts some conditions on this curve. And the stableness also puts some conditions on this curve. For example, it cannot be a complete intersection, which will immediately give you something unstable. So with this kind of conditions, then Yao, well, we first sort of propose that these things exist and they should realize. So to see why these are relevant for DRY is to just compute their topological invariants. And you see this behavior, which is this three halves kind of thing for this class. And this is when, so C1E is also zero. Okay. So you can find this kind of bundles, and then it was proven by Wu and Shenteng Yang later this year that these actually are stable, vector bound, well, reflexive shifts of vector bundles, whichever you want to call them. They are not really vector bundles. So now the game becomes trying to use this construction to cover the range of DRY. And I'll just see that for this elliptic curve, fiber over this two project space, then if you draw, so all those bundles which are allowed to exist by this construction, they have some kind of distribution of so if this is DRY schematically, then these guys do not exist between a certain value of C3, I think. So there are regions where they don't cover it. There's some kind of missing stuff. But then they have also a little bit of extra. So like roughly do something like this for rank 2. And you can try to go up to higher ranks. Construction is very, I mean, the rank is determined by this guy. So we can construct these kind of bundles, which were exactly the ones which show up in Bogolyubov type of inequality, the Serre construction. We can construct these kind of things which cover a large part of the RY conjecture range. I think I shouldn't go over time, but so the generalization of this is just to pick some wall of marginal stability. You start with one object and try to follow this to other objects, and then you try to compute the numerical invariants for this guy based on that this guy and this guy both solve attractor equations. Okay, so that's it. And so these inequalities will, so this is where RG is actually open. We already have examples where it doesn't satisfy anything like this. So this is not satisfying. So it's, I think for, I don't understand Deneff and Moore's work very well, but it seems from their statements that there are different classes of BPI states for which degeneracy seem to be behaving differently. So it appears that if you just construct bundles using this kind of construction, then you also have bundles whose numbers, true numbers, behave differently. I'm not sure if this has relation with their construction. It's motivated in part by that. What you know is that these are actual attractor points, and this guy never actually flows to some regular guy. So you basically, the input that is that these charges should solve attractor equations, but then that allows you to parameterize the trend numbers for each constituent. And assuming that these two guys form some kind of complex, which give you this guy, then using the additivity of chain characters, you can deduce the, basically, well, it's like central charge. You can deduce the value for this guy. And then you can try to bound the values. But it's the real life is much more complicated than this. I think the natural thing is to use bridge length stability, but I'm trying to keep this argument sort of physical. Maybe something else. So, for example, if you even if you remember this Danilov's condition, it says something like if you have two of the charges labeled by I and J, a physical condition is that this is really inverse maybe of the distance between these black hole centers, and you know this has to be bigger than zero. So you can check that these things should be, these things are always satisfied, given that you allow this equation to dictate basically what kind of complex these two guys form. So basically, depending on the direction of the map between these two guys, you can always satisfy this kind of collected set of equations. Well, inequalities. There's always a region. But and that's not much. That just tells you in the complex how things sit relative to each other. So you can predict, given a bunch of charges, the corresponding, and this already kind of non-trivial, tells you in which direction your maps should go in the complex. It's not completely trivial from the algebraic point of view. But as far as these numbers go, I'm not sure they are that, yeah, there are counterexamples. But another thing to notice is this odd turn numbers actually subtract this alternating sum for the complex. So if you have two guys, you know, just two forming a complex, then in this case, the turn number actually subtract. So there's a bound which is sort of this, there's self cancellation, and the bound. So for example, Toda found a bound where it roughly goes like this linearly, but it doesn't involve a second turn number, and this he showed this very strong condition. This is really simple. It tells you that X has a single sort of divisor class. And that just means you have a hypersurface. So with a few extra algebraic conditions, then you can prove that some bound like this form is true. So this was proven for especially the quintic. But if I take elliptic fiber Calabi-Yau, it will definitely will not be hypersurface, and this is not a true condition, then things are harder. I think there's nobody put like a conjecture about this. Like, nobody really claimed that for general coherent shift I should have such behavior. The general reason is if you can do a lot of things, which you are not allowed to if you require the object to be a bounder. For example, if you have a surface and you just start adding particular points, like point like instantons, then you just modify C2 without bound. You can go either way. There's no bound. I think BPSness pushes to one direction. Basically, it's ASD versus SD. One of them is BPS. It goes up or down. There's one direction it goes. I think. So if you don't require to be a vector bounder, I think you can go without, because instanton number can go pretty high, even fixing the rank. I think it's basically free. So back to the question, if in core dimension one you can do something similar, I guess you can do something similar. It's just not going to be a bundle. It's core dimension one, once you screw it up, it's really some shape. Why do you?
Just on physics, the generating function for the things which have no discretion, just before it should be on.
Right.
You fix the number of deformations. You vary
the right, so those are really.
Those are really.
Things that people who study DTMR and they often study these kind of things without a D6. Yeah. So here the general thing, well, the sort of way this is going is trying to get to rank non-zero or higher rank shapes or bundles. Generally, people here concentrate on rank one guys.
But rank zero.
Rank zero.
I think there are
so
conjectures that you think have been.
What kind of conjectures are these?
So if you fix the deformation.
Right. Uh-huh.
Plus one. And you sum over, make a generic function for sequence.
Okay.
Then that is supposed to be have some multiple properties.
Yes. Right, I think especially for elliptic fibered guys, there's a lot there are like also like for general rank for rank one even they are supposed to be modular forms. But I should say, like for threefolds. Okay, so another thing that usually people like a lot is to use some kind of restriction theorem. Actually, this is how Donaldson's proof was more geometric, less technical. He proved his version of his theorems, I think, on algebraic surfaces using restriction. So it allows you to go down in direction, in dimension. So basically, you have a stable object, for example, on the threefold, and I pick what's called a generic surface. Then the theorem would say that it will be stable on the generic surface. But if I give you a surface, people don't know whether it's generic or not. So for example, if I consider D4 bound state, and how to make sure that this BPS condition, right, that guaranteed supersymmetry is precisely how to guarantee that this guy doesn't kill. This condition doesn't precisely kill this generic thing. If it precisely kills the generic thing, then it's sort of basically I can probably find something that's stable on this particular surface, but it wouldn't tell me whether maybe it came from restricting something on the threefold. Or it wouldn't tell me like relations about third chain class. It would only be sort of a four-dimensional guy. I guess I would like to, so for this for things which are K3 fiber. Let's see, these kind of things. Then there's a family, and for this family, I always have some property for the bound state charges. Then probably I can claim something. I think that there's this conjecture called Clem. KK way, right? Actually about that. In those cases, you do have modular forms. And they came about because you have this K3, and you have a duality to heterotic string. And here, it's sort of, you have some word shit. This elliptic curve, the elliptic fiber here, becomes some word shit. And on this word shit, you can argue this modular form. It would be nice if one can sort of, because these DT invariants are related to Gromov-Witten in some very simple way. You just change some parameters and do some exponentiation, and you divide by something, which is vacuum amplitudes. Yeah, the stable pairs. So you could imagine that you can do that, translate your DT invariants into some Gromov numbers, and then try to take that generating function and argue that it might have come from some index calculation. But I think that's originally how it was done. So the mathematical proof was really, I think the proof was having to do with this invention of Jin Li and Baosan Wu. They had a theory about if you have a Calabi-Yau threefold or something else, how you can break this into pieces, and in each piece you can compute this thing, and then you sum it. You sum these individual pieces for the generative function, and you put it together. So the proof, they actually use this kind of thing. So you degenerate this guy into pieces, and you compute it. You do this until you, I think you don't have higher genus curves. But the picture why you got modular forms is pretty, so this KKV conjecture thing, this was sort of clear from the relation to heterotic strings. Given the relation to Gromov-Witten, maybe you can capture this with some partition function, but I don't know. Because these bundles, especially bundles which are kind of written as extensions, these guys are pretty easy to realize with this kind of 2-0 Gish-Lemierre CO model. But you just put a bunch of fermions. I don't know if this means you can do some localization calculation to arrive at this kind of, so it'll be some kind of elliptic genus calculation that will give you this kind of generating function. I mean, there's a general difficulty which doesn't arise for surfaces, but arises for threefolds. So if you, for example, you consider Goffman-Kolmogorov alpha, or if you consider sort of Hilbert scheme or DT, these things are related. Then for threefolds, this guy, which would have helped you to compute this environment, is very singular everywhere. So the modular space for points on the threefold is very singular guy. Once the number of points increase, I think more than 4. So basically the dimension of some smooth guy wouldn't match the actual dimension by counting the ways you have to move these points. So it seems very hard to consider threefolds this is kind of the stable pairs that people, Richard Thomas and Pandahari Pandey. I think they can compute this because there's the corresponding thing is really nice. It's actually projective space. But in general, this is kind of hopeless to compute this guy. But if you look at the physics picture, then it's relatively simple. It has to do whether you want to, so one guy is the Coulomb branch, the other guy is the Higgs branch. So basically, whether you want to put two like M2 brains on top of each other with this considered as sort of a thickening like that, or you go to some kind of, in that picture, you really have two brains which are intersecting in some way. I don't know, like there are two ways to compute this. I think GVE sums up both contributions. But I think this guy mathematically is the problem because it's non-reduced. So Witten was going to publish a paper about sort of providing a good foundation of Gopal-Kromar-Wafa invariants. I don't know like what's in it. But I mean, it would be worth studying.